Through an active and successful legacy gift program. The next time you meet with your advisors to review your long-term financial plans, please remember to include KPFT. Ensure your commitment to public broadcasting with the help of your attorney. A bequest is a very simple thing to put into place. If you need help or have questions, call our development director at 713-526-4000. That's 713-526-4000, extension 315. You can help to ensure that the independent voice of KPFT will be preserved for generations to come. Please name KPFT as a beneficiary in your will today. This is KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings, welcome to Technology Bites, here, now, thank you.
There you go, press that button.
He's stretching. Yeah.
Okay.
Wow, Groovehouse turned into Afflicted. How'd you do that?
It's an amazing metamorphosis.
And now he's a beautiful
surprise.
Surprise.
Shell script.
Welcome to Technology Bites, everybody. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Wow, everybody's here.
It's a bingo.
you can mark off your bingo cards. We have a full geek array. All right. Well, welcome to the show, everybody. We're glad you could tune in. We're glad you're here. And you can visit us online at geekradio.com. If you want to see our website, it's all about getting the breath filter and putting it on Groovehouse's mic. It's all about our show. It's got all of our podcasts, all the links you need for the Peter Hughes news and other segments.
We're getting there.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Ransomware comes free with IRC.
We haven't gotten to that part yet.
everybody will
Are we distributing
some.
Equation group files
we're
already?
Run out of, yes. We're going to okay, run out awesome. Of ransomware.
I don't have enough malware for everybody. All right, yeah, geekradio.com. You can also hang out on IRC. The channel that we like, not the channel, the server we like to use is irc.cuckoo.com. In the channel Tech Bytes.
Oh, Coco, where are you? Killing me, man.
It's all death from here on out.
Yeah.
Yeah, so irc.cuckoo.com, channel Tech Bytes, if you want to hang out. It's the show within a show.
B-Y-T-E-S.
B-Y-T-E-S?
Yeah, Tech Bytes, not B-I-T-E or B-I-G-H.
I should create, we should create another channel called Tech Bytes.
I was like, what? Bring your own terminal server? What is he doing?
Bring your terminal server, yes. We still need an E in there.
Term
Emacs server. I don't know.
All right, so you can hang out there with us. You can also use the contact form on the website to send us your comments and questions during the show if you care to. Don't get too much of that, but that's all right. And if you want to call, Groovehouse will be glad to stare at the phone as it blinks and blinks and blinks.
I'm gonna break the show now.
Uh-oh.
How so?
Because we mentioned ransomware. So I read an article where a guy, you know, there's like the 419.
We interrupt this broadcast.
You know, there's like the 419 eaters.
Yes. We might want to, we know that. But
oh,
you should,
the hacker thingy.
You should tell everybody what that is.
Nah, they can look it up.
All right.
We got
There's no time for that.
We got to keep our snobby eliteness. there was a guy who, you know, those things where. It used to be they would kind of like cold call you and say, "Hey, we've got a notification that your computer has problems. Like, here, we're from Microsoft. Let us remote connect to your computer."
Yes, gotten a couple of those.
So that wasn't. I guess it wasn't going so well for them. So they took a different tactic where they actually are injecting, you know, pop-up screens like
directly
as ads onto people's screens and giving them a toll-free number, which makes it look. Maybe a little more legit because it's a toll-free number. Of course, if they can turn it around, then it pays for itself a hundredfold. Anyway, so you call them, and a lot of people don't know any better, so they call them. So this one guy knew what was going on. I think his mother or something got it.
They got his mom.
And
yeah.
and so he called them and acted like he was an older gentleman with the same name or whatever, and said. You know, I got this. I need to, you know what's going on. Like on my computer. And what this guy did is he set up a Windows XP virtual machine on his system, and he's familiar with a lot of viruses and ransomware and stuff. So he called him up. And he told him. They said, "Oh, here, let me use this tool to connect to your computer." So he let them, and they poked around. Like, "Oh yeah, they ran this thing." They're like, "Look at all these viruses. Oh my God, you need this tool that we sell." This antivirus, and it's only $219. It was something insane.
That's
an insane price.
What a bargain.
That's how they do you,
and
so, man.
But look at all those viruses. It's worth every penny.
Yeah. So he was just like...
And since Technology Bytes isn't taking calls to tell us how to get rid of spyware anymore, I got to pay this money.
So this guy's like, "Hey, well, you know, I'm getting old, and I've got my credit card, but I'm really having some problems, like, reading the number." He was basically kind of screwing with them and making them annoyed, asking them questions and saying, like, "Well, how can I trust you? Because I'm looking at these IPs and the woman on the line said localhost meant it was a secure connection." So he was like, "Yeah, but this one shows it's from India or something, and that's where you are." And she was like, "Oh, that must be a hacker that's connected. That's not my connection, though, because whatever.
Of course."
Anyway, so
they're everywhere.
He said, "Well, let me give you the credit card information." And he said, "Like, oh, my eyesight's so bad, I can't read these little numbers. Is there any way I can, like, I'll scan a picture of it, and then I'll upload the picture, and then you can pull the picture and open it and read the numbers, because I can't read them."
Bad eyesight, old gene.
Yeah. And so she's like, "Okay, cool." Mm-hmm. And so he sends it, but what he actually sent her was ransomware.
The Locky campaign, yeah.
So the person clicked on it to try to open it, and it didn't open, and nothing really happened. They're like, "Well, nothing really happened." They're like, Oh, I'm sorry. I guess, I don't know, maybe I did it wrong.
I'm bad at computers. Meanwhile, it was encrypting all the files.
Meanwhile, yeah, it was encrypting all the files.
Now, do we know that it worked?
I mean, it's ransomware. I'm assuming it works like it works. I mean, it encrypted all our stuff, and they had to pay somebody else how many ever hundreds of dollars.
I mean, do we know that it actually the payload was actually delivered and actually did what it intended it to do?
I don't know that the story
goes that far.
Yeah,
it tells
goes that far.
I mean, obviously, we're hoping that it took that computer and all the other computers.
Well,
the
thing is, yeah, if it does a search, if it if it's one that actually like probes for. Open things.
Now, if he knows their number, he could call them back and say, I've seen a lot of virus activity coming from your network. Oh. The closest I've come to trolling those guys is they call my phone now and again, and I got one guy on the phone, and I really wish that I'd had a VM set up so I could have him connect to that. But instead, since I didn't have him, didn't have anything to let him connect to,
you had a V8.
I let him explain to me what he wanted me to do, and I kept not understanding it.
That's the best.
But then, to even make it more funny and troll-like, I said, you're not very good at computers, are you? And he goes, oh, I am very good at computers.
You are the one who is not good at computers.
He was really offended that I dared to call into question his computeracy.
Nice.
His computers.
Also, in News of the Weird, the NSA came out and said that they're very concerned about like their loss of privacy or their loss of stealth because they feel that them being monitored has a chilling effect on the agency. Because they just got hacked and lost some of their tools,
well,
maybe.
You know, maybe they should have thought of that.
Yeah, so a little bit weird. Because I kind of feel the same way.
What?
They shouldn't be watching us. It's having a chilling effect on, all the hackery and the research kind of stuff, So it's just kind of weird to see them say, like, hey, don't hack us meanwhile they're out. And then stuff they got hacked were their hacking tools.
It's
they
just
lost
not
their
fair.
Tools.
If that has a chilling effect, then how do you explain global warming?
Mm-hmm. Well, that only happens on the first Saturday after the third Friday.
There you go.
All right, so there's your broken show bit. Anything else on the 911 or the eaters?
No, that was good.
Is there a story online about that? Can you find that story?
Yeah, I don't remember where I. Oh, I actually.
Oh, it's out there. Yeah, it's a couple places.
I think I saw it on Diaspora on my Diaspora feed.
Okay. Oh my gosh!
How have you pronounced that?
Oh my gosh! Okay, wait. Diaspora. Okay, never mind. I was looking at something on this version of macOS, and I was super confused about what I was looking at, and I thought I found something amazing. But I didn't. Never mind. Continue what you were doing before I made my interjection.
It's the fourth.
The prompt has a number symbol instead of the normal dollar sign.
It's the fourth thing that comes up if you Google ransomware Windows call. Fake Windows support call seeks to scam and infect computer. Oh, see.
Nice.
No, that's not it. Guy tricks. It's the the fourth one done. Guy tricks Windows tech support scammers into installing ransomware.
One for the good guys.
All right, so giving out the vital statistics and all that good stuff. What was that? It sounded like a digital cuckoo. That was kind of awesome.
Pete's computer's printer is online, I think. Nice. Dot matrix printer. No,
it was a call that came in before I could
mute it.
Mute the ringer.
Right, get those loops away.
It was not unpleasant. It was not unpleasant. All right. So anyway, we're going to now take you to San Antonio, Texas, where Peter Hughes is standing by with the Technology Bytes InfoShot. Take it away, InfoShot. I said, take it away, InfoShot.
Somebody better take it.
It's the Technology Bytes InfoShot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
So Intel is hoping that we've talked about the death of the 3.5 millimeter audio jack, but Intel is on board and is hoping that people will ditch the analog and go to USB-C. The 3.5 millimeter audio jack was popularized as the way to plug headphones into Sony's portable Walkman tape player and got a new lease on life as the way to handle audio on virtually every mobile phone and PC. But if Intel and its allies get their way, the new USB Type-C connector that spread to some high-end PCs and phones will replace it. The big problem is, of course, all the people are unhappy about their 3.5 millimeter jack headphones suddenly becoming useless if unless you purchase an adapter. But at the Intel Developer Forum in San Francisco on Tuesday, Intel architects Brad Saunders and Rahman Ismail sketched out a coming USB audio standard that could help push the 3.5-millimeter jack aside. The new specification adds features to ensure a USB headphone doesn't drain too much battery power and defines how buttons for pausing music or lowering volume work. They say it, quote, will really make USB Type-C the right connector for audio, according to Saunders. There are some arguments to be made for embracing USB audio, Saunders said, and the companies that make USB controller chips are very excited about the idea, oddly enough. You mean replacing all those headphones on all those devices going forward? They're excited about that? I wonder why. For one thing, the big things are that the audio jack takes up volume inside phones, which, of course, everyone wants to be as slim as possible. Another thing, the analog circuitry of a 3.5-millimeter audio connection can cause interference that disrupts other electronics in a phone. And digital audio opens up possibilities for lots of sound processing options without requiring expensive headphones or earbuds. Well, that includes audio effects to make music sound like it's playing in a big concert hall, or signal processing to cancel noise like jet engines or rumbling trains. All of those come into play if audio is in a digital domain, quote, Saunders said, which would let phone makers offer premium features without having to sign deals with premium audio companies like Dolby or Bose. So that's interesting. USB devices have controller chips that consume power. That's no problem for PCs with big batteries, but it's a bigger deal for phones. That's why the new audio standard requires power management abilities like turning off features that aren't being used, according to Saunders. As a result, with USB headphones, the difference in battery life is negligible compared to 3.5-millimeter audio jacks. The other ability of USB that's on the way is video. DisplayPort and HDMI are good for high-end video, but many people have more modest needs. And updated USB video technology under development will handle that. And unlike HDMI and DisplayPort, will work even if people are using a USB hub to plug a lot of devices into a single port on their laptop or phone. So, there are devices with USB-C already, but apparently we're going to be seeing it on a lot more stuff, including phones and stuff. There's going to be a period of confusion as we get used to the new standards. That's especially true since you won't be able to count on every USB port supporting every new USB feature. But the USB implementers forum that develops USB is happy with the port's progress, said President Jeff Ravencraft at the conference. Quote, we have a single cable that can do pretty much everything you want it to, he said, which I guess that's sort of what USB was supposed to be since way, way back. And then here's on the hackery front. This one's interesting. For years there's been warnings about keystroke logging malware. That's really one of the best ways for, somebody with malicious intent to get usernames and passwords from desktop and laptop computers. In the past year, though, a similar threat has begun to emerge on mobile devices. This is called overlay malware that impersonates login pages from popular apps and websites as users launch the apps so that they enter their credentials to banking, social networking, and other services, and then that, since it's the malware overlay, it sends that information to the attackers. And then in a very sad piece of news, this kind of malware has even found its way onto Google's AdSense network, according to a report on Monday from Kaspersky. The weapon would automatically download when users visited certain Russian news sites without requiring users to click on the advertisements. It then prompts users for administrative rights, which makes it harder for antivirus software or the user to remove it, and proceeds to steal credentials through fake login screens and by intercepting, deleting, and sending text messages. The Kaspersky researchers called it a, quote, gratuitous act of violence against Android users. By simply viewing their favorite news sites over their morning coffee, users can end up downloading Last Browser Update.apk, a banking Trojan detected by Kaspersky Solutions as Trojan Banker, .androidos.svpeng.q, according to the company. You know, there you are, minding your own business, reading the news, and boom, no additional clicks or following links required. The issue, according to Google, the issue has been resolved, adding that there's no indication the attack ever affected more than one website. The company said in the past it works to block malware attack from third-party apps distributed through its networks. The effort has become increasingly critical as Google and other advertising networks try to stop people or dissuade them from filtering out ads altogether with ad blockers, which also aims to reduce ad-delivered malware and the web beacons used to track users across websites. According to Kaspersky, there's been a 15.6% increase in the number of financial malware in the second quarter of 2016 compared to the previous quarter, you know, and ongoing. So keep an eye out on that stuff because there's, you know, they keep getting more creative. Here's one. The creators of such malware can charge would-be fraudsters thousands of dollars on underground hacking marketplaces for mobile malware tools that deploy such bogus login pages, often in conjunction with other features like the ability to intercept SMS. This is according to research by Limor Kesem, an executive security advisor at IBM Security. Attackers then send phishing-style SMS messages to mobile users to encourage them to install apps containing the malware, sometimes even soliciting their phone numbers through pop-up messages on PCs in order to send a link to the malicious apps. So it gets that social engineering piece to get people to install the malware apps. Keep your eye out on that kind of stuff. And if your suspicion is raised at all on any of these things, don't install it. Don't call the number. Don't unsolicited SMSs, even if they look legit, you may want to be, you know, think about that. Think about your settings and make sure that you haven't, you know, if you haven't told that company that they're allowed to, you know, notify you of stuff, then the fact that you got a notice from them is a pretty good sign that somebody's after you on the malware front. So then Barrett alluded to it in the first segment. The National Security Agency has apparently been has been hacked. Apparently an anonymous group managed to obtain hacking tools that may belong to the NSA. The files are up for auction to the highest bidder and allegedly include cyber weapons that rival the Stuxnet computer worm. On Tuesday, Edward Snowden, the famous NSA former contractor, tweeted that it isn't, quote, unprecedented for cyber spies to try to hack the agency's malware staging servers. The NSA itself routinely hacks into servers used by opposing groups, Snowden added. This is how the agency can steal rival hacking tools, and it can lurk undetected on these servers for years. But here's my favorite quote. The, quote, NSA is not made out of magic, Snowden said. Our rivals do the same thing to us and occasionally succeed. Now, on this auction, it's not clear if the tools actually belong to the NSA. The anonymous hackers who obtained them claim they were stolen from the Equation Group, a top cyber espionage team that may be linked to the NSA and may have helped develop the Stuxnet worm. The hackers posted sample files online, and the files contain numerous exploits, implants, and tools for firewall and router products from Cisco, Juniper Networks, Fortinet, and Chinese vendor TopSec, according to security researchers. If you go to the articles, you know, all the articles we talk about on the show are linked from geekradio.com or from our Facebook page. So you can like our page and get the links and stuff. And so there is a link in the article to all the exploits that have been found so far. Bruce Martin, a director of vulnerability intelligence at Risk-Based Security, said he was surprised the hackers offered up these exploits as free samples. He said that they have a huge value and normally hackers would never give them away. For instance, a few of the exploits target Cisco products, which are widely used and thought to be secure and stable and can allow a bad actor to bypass a firewall. Now, the question, you know, I guess one of the things is if this is what they're going to put out there for free, then maybe that means these were the like lighter end of it that they want to give the samples of and that there's more serious stuff available. Let's see. Potentially more alarming issue is what else might have been stolen. The hackers who call themselves the Shadow Brokers have warned they've obtained other cyber weapons that could wreak havoc on financial systems. We auction best files to highest bidder. Auction files better than Stuxnet was there in their posts on GitHub and Tumblr that were later taken down. Security experts suspect that the Shadow Brokers may actually be foreign spies who are trying to threaten the U.S. Whoever stole this data now wants the world to know, said Nicholas Weaver, a security researcher at the International Computer Science Institute in California. He said that in a blog post. He and other security researchers have noted the timing of the auction. It comes as the U.S. is investigating whether Russian state-sponsored hackers may have stolen sensitive files from the Democratic National Committee. Those are the ones that got released on WikiLeaks. The Shadow Brokers, however, have painted themselves as hacktivists who oppose, quote, wealthy elites, unquote. Their auction is still up for bids and accepts Bitcoin. Although these Shadow Brokers are offering no guarantees with their auction, the sale probably isn't a scam. On Tuesday, Kaspersky Lab found further evidence that Shadow Brokers did indeed steal files from the Equation Group. So wonder what happens there. I mean, does the U.S. basically pony up and try to buy back their own exploits? Or does somebody else get it? Or what happens from there? I guess we'll stay tuned and see what happens. And then finally, NPR made an announcement today that's interesting, and I wonder how far it will go. They're going to get rid of comments. As of August 23rd, online comments will be disabled. They've had online comments since 2008, but now they will be disabled. With the change, NPR joins a long list of other news organizations choosing to move conversations about its journalism off of its own site and instead rely on social media to pick up the slack. Scott Montgomery, managing editor for Digital News, says the decision should not be taken to mean that NPR does not value audience engagement. But at this point, he argued the audience itself has decided for NPR, choosing to engage much more via social media. So I guess he's kind of portraying it that that people, you know, that people have moved on. From this blog post that where I found this, which is Elizabeth Jensen, the NPR ombudsman blog, let's see, said that in July, NPR.org recorded nearly 33 million unique users and 491,000 comments, but the comments came from just 19,400 commenters. So you can do the math. That's a lot of comments per person. 0.06% of users who are commenting, a number that's apparently stayed steady. So it's not like they're, you know, cutting off large numbers of people, but certainly the number of comments from a small number of people doesn't make it much of a conversation. So now we can have it on Twitter, where you can where I'm sure it's much less trolly and much less abusive. And that's the news.
Okay.
Which you can't really comment on our site either, because we don't or do we take comments on our stuff?
Well, people are welcome to comment.
Comments are
welcome to call
thing.
And comment.
It's really difficult. Some sites can get away with having really good comments because they invest time and effort into policing the community, and you know, you have to have heavy moderation, and it helps to have an engaged readership that wants to talk about the subject at hand rather than, you know, Trump or whatever. Because
well, the sad part is, yeah, the drive-by trollery is really tough. Because if any attention comes to any group about whatever subject, any kind of large-scale attention, then the trolls show up.
Well, forget about the political and social commentary type comments. What aggravates me to no end is technical sites where people post a question for a technical issue and then looking for people to supply answers to the problem. So somebody might post a question along the lines of, my Macintosh, my 2013 MacBook Pro is beach balling whenever I do blah, blah, blah. And somebody will come back with a comment and says, well, I don't have a Mac, but on my Windows computer.
Great.
And then they'll provide some answer that has nothing to do. It's not actually a solution, and people just want to comment.
My cat's breath smells like cat food.
It's like, you broke my Wookiee.
It's the quality of that comment, right?
Yeah, and it's aggravating because you want to go in there. And so a lot of times you'll sift through it. And I like there's a couple of sites that rank the comments. So like they'll say this comment actually solved the problem, and they'll flag that comment. But people just want to comment to comment, like the whole first thing where people want to get online and be the first one to comment. And it's just aggravating because I'm surprised that
so far it seems to me that mechanism or the strong moderator mechanisms are the only ones that really keep the trolls posting down. You know, I would have thought there'd be another more automated way where the community could sort of self-police and get rid of that stuff, but it hasn't seemed to happen.
No, it's ultimately useless. I mean, my helpline blog doesn't get that many comments, and I'm grateful for it because it's like the whole idea behind when I write the helpline is that somebody poses a question and I present an answer that's actually been researched and proven to solve the problem, and somebody will come in and say, well, I really think they ought to do blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no, that won't actually solve it. I did that. It didn't work. And I didn't put that in my answer because the answer is the answer. Oh, well, the internet people don't get it.
Yes. Cliff Clavin is an archetype. If you've ever watched Cheers, and he's out there, and now that Cheers isn't on, apparently he's been cloned and appears in discussions everywhere. The know-it-all who doesn't know much at all.
Yeah.
You know, those are a favorite. Or else the other ones are the fun thing, you know, so I do occasionally read the comments and things. I know if your blood pressure is too high, you shouldn't. But the fascinating thing to me is when the spam type posts where, you know, there's some discussion and there's a real discussion going on. So you're reading it and you're following it. And then suddenly, like a total non sequitur, it's like, my aunt made $4,000 last month with this incredible technique or whatever. Well, and they just ignore it.
You can tell a lot about a site that lets a comment like that sit for months and months and months. So they're not policing the comments.
Yeah.
Or they approved it if they have moderated comments. All right. So where did Groovehouse? Oh, there he is. He's just ducked down behind the monitor. Just want to make sure you're still with us, Groovehouse. Sorry. Oh, Inflicted left the room, did he?
Yes, he did.
That bum.
I'm still here, though.
That's good. Glad you're here.
Holding down the board.
Holding down the board.
Is it heavy?
It's heavy.
It ain't heavy. It's his board.
That's right.
Well, I mean, before we leave the comments topic, I have to say that it's not something that internet comments don't have to be poison and toxic and terrible, and they don't have to be
awful.
But
they are.
But it requires a lot of effort on the part of a website creator or a website manager or an admin to keep them non-toxic and terrible, because it's exactly like you said, Jay, the drive-bys and the people who just want to be heard and make noise without actually contributing to the conversation will drown out everything unless there's a way through moderation or through maybe community moderation to keep it suppressed. And some sites, I think, have, I know this sounds crazy, some sites have really good comments. Not to toot my own horn too much, but ours, I think, Ars Technica has outstanding comments generally. I mean, unless you're in a climate change thread or a thread where anything political is going on, then it's terrible. But
Onion AV has pretty good comments.
Yeah, the AV Club has solid comments, and it's because they do pretty heavy active moderation too. But I mean,
well, I think certain sites do rise above. I mean, there's, you know, a site like Ars Technica, which would attract the kind of readers that could actually present comments that are germane to the conversation. But then you go, I think it has a lot to do with specialization. If you're a general news site that attracts your audience for your technical articles is the same audience you're getting for your Kardashian articles.
Mm-hmm. You are completely out of luck.
Right.
So, but if you're specialized, there's a tech focus website. I mean, even Dwight Silverman's tech blog before it went away because he stopped doing it, that he moderated the comments, and the comments were relatively good. You know, there's some good conversations in there. But it does, like Lee says, I think it does take a lot of work.
You've got to stay on it. You need to either it becomes your full-time job, or you have, you know, a staff of moderators who have to step on the bad stuff very,
and then
very
they
hard.
Start screaming freedom of speech, and, you know, I pay to be a part of this site, and you're suppressing my voice.
I think Dig, you know, if as you follow the, you know, there's sort of the ones that rise to the top, and then they're dethroned by someone else. And Dig, I think one of the things that took them down was that they had a crisis of moderating, and what replaced them was Reddit, which is essentially where, you know, the people who start a subreddit, I think whoever starts it sort of controls who the moderators are. And then they, you know, each subreddit kind of has its own, I guess, culture or whatever, where they manage it themselves, which is kind of Wild West, but apparently it works enough that they've kind of stayed to one of the top sites.
Yep.
Yeah, they do.
You know,
I mean, it's
'cause apparently their definition of troll, yes, this is political, but it illustrates the point is, Trump, when he did his AMA, didn't do it the normal Reddit way. He did it on the Trump subreddit. So it was all managed and moderated by people whose whole life is being pro-Trump in the Trump Reddit. And so they had at one point somebody asked a question about what things would be reasons why you wouldn't vote for Trump, and then the moderators deleted every answer that anyone posted.
Right. Yeah.
Because that didn't fit into their culture. And then, although the irony is that then they took credit that, see, there's no reason that you shouldn't vote for Trump, because look, there weren't any that showed up here, even as they deleted them. So anyway, but that one, that's got its own weaknesses, because, you know, they're the plus side of comments that aren't popular. You know, when they're not trolly, is it does open the door, open the window to other points of view. And so we get caught between the troll storm and the echo chamber, you know, where everybody's basically, yeah, I agree. I agree totally. I agree 100%. I agree 110%. Yeah, we all agree.
Whee!
So. So I don't know. I mean, that's the downside of no comments, or of too tight a moderation also.
All right. Any other any other comments about comments?
Nope.
Okay, we've moderated.
Well, somebody moderated. Like you would say that, wouldn't they?
Mm-hmm. First. Of course we would.
Mr. Social Justice Warrior.
All right, so I want to go around before we move on to the next segment. And where are we? I've caught up on Mr. Robot.
Oh, I'm totally. I haven't even started season two yet. I'm terrible.
It takes about 5 episodes, and then it gets good.
Haven't started. It gets dark.
It's dark.
It gets. Although there's some just brilliant. I mean, satiric, and you know, the idea is that there's. If we talk about it the right way, then it doesn't spoil it for anybody. But they had a very 80s sitcom segment.
Did you watch the commercials during that?
Yeah, I watch it. I've cut the cord, and so I knew that the commercials were part of the program, and so I watched them.
It was
yeah.
very clever in terms of advertising that they were able to make. If you allowed yourself to catch part of the commercials, you were hooked. You said, okay, I've got to watch the commercials now. Because they ran vintage commercials during the 80s thing. And then they also did, for all the USA Network shows, they redid the promos for them as 80s. So, like, they did Suits, which is one of my favorite USA shows. I really like that show. But they did an 80s version of the trailer for that, and it was just hilarious. And,
well, and
of course,
they
that happened.
Got...
Go ahead.
the theme, that the music that they did for it, they got the people who did the Full House theme to come up with a Mr. Robot, you know, sitcom theme for purposes of this. I mean, it was pretty brilliant, and it fits in the show. It's not like, it's not a non sequitur.
No.
And so it was just kind of, it's just sort of really amazing where they're taking all this, which makes it even harder to figure out, okay, where is all this going?
Well, and it's also particularly good to have that happen in Mr. Robot while I was watching pseudo binge watching Stranger Things. So there was a whole 80s thing going on, all of a sudden kind of reached a crescendo.
Demogorgon.
I cast magic missile.
There's a video that recuts, that takes clips from like trailer stuff from Stranger Things
and turns it into an 80s.
Yeah,
I saw that. I think Groovehouse shared that with
me. That was me.
Posted
that.
The other video thing. The other video thing of interest, and yes, it's political, and you know, make of it what you will. There's a comedian in England called, his name is Peter Serafinowicz, and he is very good at doing impressions, and does some really out there stuff. You might know him. He was in Shaun of the Dead. He played the roommate, the angry roommate in Shaun of the Dead. And, he's bigger in the UK than here, but he's done what he calls it Sassy Donald Trump. And what it is he replays, it's similar to, the bad lip reading, except instead he just reads the Trump speeches over the Trump video of the same speech, you know, and kind of matches the mouth, you know, the so it looks like it's really Trump's voice, except he uses the voice of a sassy gay man, and it is really, really funny. It, like, you know, I would take a guess that Trump fans are not fans of it, but I will say it's laugh out loud funny to hear, because he does not change a word. All the words are there. He just changes how they're said, and the expressions on Trump's face go with it and all that. So yeah, I would think the KPFT audience, the sassy gay man thing probably has a lot more, is a lot more fun to them. And, so it might be enjoyable.
What do you say,
Pete?
What's the subtext?
Oh, here go the phones. Thanks, Pete.
careful now.
Thanks, Pete.
Well, all our sassy gay listeners are calling up.
We'll forward all those calls to San Antonio.
Abort, abort, abort. Quick, say something non-controversial about tech.
That's the huge troll demographic at KPFT. I really don't. Given all the shows that we've led into, or that
Ghost of Jimmy Carper on line one.
Yeah, really.
Stop it.
Yeah. When the hosts of the next show introduced themselves as Gay Jim and Straight Jim, or Gay Jim and Bi Jim, I think it varied. You kind of go, well, I think that it's a pretty open, station. Anyways,
I hear you keep trying to promo or intro the next segment. So, like it's
sorry.
That's okay. No,
it's not okay.
Yeah. Lee has declared it unfit for radio.
Nah, it's okay. This time.
It's not in keeping with our professional demeanor.
It's okay for now.
We have a reprieve or a leaprieve. Lee has got... I'm watching Lee with fascination. Lee has loaded up the new... What is the latest?
This is Mac OS Sierra. It's the public beta, which is actually in parity with the developer beta. Yeah, I was trying to create an APFS volume.
Apple Pear... I see what you did there.
did it without even thinking about it. No, I was trying to, real quick, while we were doing other stuff, I was trying to get an APFS volume constructed and built so that I could, you know, just sort of have it here. Turns out it's harder than... APFS is Apple's new file system that they'll be launching at some point in 2017. There's some beta tools available in the beta version of macOS Sierra that I was sort of fiddling with. I just wanted to see if I could get it stood up and running, but apparently you can't actually format a physical volume with APFS yet, so I had to do this weird, funky workaround. That's why I haven't been talking much, because I had to create a sparse image and then mount the sparse image as a disk, and then format the mounted sparse image with APFS. You can't just do it to a blank partition for whatever reason. I don't know, because it's all in beta still. But yeah, I wanted to sort of get this going and fiddle with it a team.
And now, you've ransomwared yourself. You've encrypted all your files.
Well, he loaded the operating system and he didn't do anything else.
Yeah, I didn't.
And so he got to the station and he flipped open his MacBook Air and he went, "Oh crud!
All
I've got is the operating system and Safari. What am I gonna do
for the rest of this show?"
But since we're talking about the new Mac OS, that should lead us into our next segment.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Bite.
So we are close to the iPhone 7 launch type thing. I don't believe that it's been the announcement date has not been announced. Yes, I know it's sad, isn't it? But it is coming up. And so one of the things is that probably the rumors are going to get more solid and then suck all the joy out of whatever new things might happen on the in the actual announcement. One of the things is that photos of a space black iPhone 7 have emerged, and they're starting to look pretty good, even at the kind of low quality that you get from these kind of when they do the sort of spy photo of the new product, it's never like, you know, high def serious photography. It's always sort of pixelated and rough and watermarked and all that other stuff. But one of the rumors had been that there'd be space black as one of the colors coming.
Is Apple using that I forgot what that material is called. It's like the darkest material.
Oh, we're
like, doesn't reflect anything.
Maybe that'll be one of the secrets. The picture, no, because it doesn't look like there's like a hole in the middle of the picture where the phone goes. But it does, of course, only have the single. They don't show the top of the phone, but it's got the one port down at the bottom. And I guess the other piece that could be either the picture might be fake or the phone is upside down, but there's, instead of the dot, instead of the physical button that you usually would see for the home button, there's like three dots that look like they're just integral to the surface of the phone. So I don't know. Well, actually, I guess that's the back, and then the front, the guy's thumb is covering it. It doesn't have any of if it's the back of the phone, doesn't have any bands for the black phone, doesn't have any bands for the antenna, so it's just like solid black with the Apple, you know, in the middle of it. So I mean, it looks interesting. You can go to our website and there's a link to the article, and you can take a look at it. It looks pretty cool. I mean, obviously it's sort of the metal iPhone 6S looking setup, but with space black. And then the other rumor that's been kind of recurring and that keeps pushing it is that the iPhone 7, that the maximum size RAM will be 256 gigabytes. So the thought is that the storage options for the iPhone 7 could be 32 gigs, 128, and 256 gigs. But one of the things that's not clear is if the 256 gig model would only be the larger 5.5-inch model, the plus phone. Because right now, you know, just for reference, the 6 and the 6S both did 16 gig, 64, and 128 gig. And a lot of people were apparently not happy with the 16 gig model, because once you put an operating system and much of anything else and a few apps, you're kind of out of space. So 32 gigs would be very welcome as the minimum size iPhone 7 going forward. One more phone thing. There had been a rumor. I hadn't talked about it too much, I don't think, because I didn't put a lot of stock in it. But the names, there were some rumors that there was going to be the iPhone 7 Pro that would be like even bigger than the Plus. Supposedly there were some leaks with pictures of a normal sized iPhone, a Plus, and a Pro next to each other, and the deal, the thing is, between the Plus and the Pro, it was pretty subtle. I mean, it's a pretty big jump from a regular iPhone to an iPhone Plus, if you've ever looked at them side by side. But the one from Plus to Pro was not very far, and apparently they have confirmed that the iPhone Pro is not going to happen. So that that it's going to just be the you know, the model and the Plus. iPhone 7, I think, seems to be the lead. You know, there was some rumors about the 6 SE and some of that, but I think that it's narrowing down to where people think this will be called the iPhone 7. And then you wonder, next year, supposedly there's going to be a much bigger update next year, and I wonder, will they just not have an S? Will there never be an iPhone 7S? Will they just, like, jump to iPhone 8 to show that it's so, you know, that they've changed it so much? We'll find out. And then lastly, there's some rumors about, and this stuff is into next year, so these are farther off. Ming-Chi Kuo at KGI expects Apple to develop a 10.5-inch iPad Pro next year, because we need even more sizes of iPad Pros, right? Because there's like a 9.7-inch iPad Pro, there's the 12.9-inch, and then I guess the 10.5-inch to slot in the middle. Let's see. So that's the rumors, that there'll be the 10.5-inch iPad Pro, that there'll be a second-generation 12.9-inch iPad Pro, as well as a low-cost 9.7-inch iPad model. The iPad Pros are expected to include an A10X processor, while the more affordable 9.7-inch iPad would have the A9X chip. Furthermore, KGI's research predicts that Apple will release a new, quote, revolutionary iPad model, but that won't be until 2018 at the latest. Or at the earliest, sorry. This next gen iPad would sport a flexible AMOLED screen and, quote, radical changes to the form factor and the user experience. According to KGI, the AMOLED iPad will, quote, follow the footsteps of the iPhone, unquote, suggesting that an upcoming iPhone will be the first to feature an AMOLED screen. Research notes that the introduction of these three new tablets won't boost tablet sales for Apple. KGI predicts that iPad shipments will decline by 10 to 20%, with Apple expected to ship 45 to 50 million iPads in 2017. So I don't know if that, you know, it's kind of like, how many iPad models do they need? There's the mini, there's the regular iPad, you know, the Air stuff, maybe that'll go away, and then three different iPad Pros. It seems like the waters are getting kind of muddy on that. Maybe they should just condense and have it where it's only by screen size and vary them up that way. But that's just my humble opinion. And that's all the Apple rumors for this week. But, you know, we're coming up on, in the next week or two, they're going to announce the date for the big event, and that should give you an idea of when an iPhone 7 would be orderable, because it's either the Friday after or the two Fridays after the event is when you can order your phone, you can pre-order your stuff.
So. Well, I was thinking, you know, the new iPhone, if a new iPhone comes out, I was going to go down from the Plus, but now I hear the big one might have a dual camera system in it.
Ooh.
And
maybe
this changes everything. There is nothing that has come before this iPhone that is anything like it.
Are you being sarcastic? Are you trumping me?
No.
What? You don't understand sarcasm?
I'm jobsing you.
From beyond the grave?
But you don't have the reality distortion field like Jobs.
You evidently have a sarcasm distortion field.
Is there a phone that has this technology already? Is that what you were...
No, I was just doing it like they would do it when they're giving the presentation about the phone.
You didn't say it was beautiful enough. You gotta say it's beautiful.
You didn't say in one more thing, this changes everything.
they don't do that very often.
You gotta,
they don't do any of that job stuff very often anymore because he's dead.
It's all Johnny Ive. You got to speak with your accent. You got to talk about how is when here at Apple, we try to always enable people to have the most amazing visions and
experiences. We unify the distortion field.
I'm
we...
sorry, but all I'm seeing...
when you hold the new iPhone in your hand...
All I'm seeing is Pirates of the Caribbean.
Parlay. Parlay.
Go to parlay your 6 to a 7.
Did you say parlay?
Wow, that was a good one.
Kind of a deep cut there, but okay.
Yes, Johnny Ive in the deep.
It's an older code,
hockey,
sir, but it checks
run
out.
Plan. Oh, Ronnie, it's a frigging.
Everything's fine.
How are you?
Fine here.
Drunk Johnny Ive as a pirate.
How are you?
Pitching Apple hardware.
You just let us board your ship. It will give you the most amazing pirating that you've ever seen.
You gotta sound more drunk, though. You gotta sound like a drunk Keith Richards to get the whole.
How would that sound, Pete?
Yeah, how does that sound, Pete?
I don't do a good Keith Richards, sorry. And I'm not drunk, so...
It's kind of funny, you said drunk Keith Richards. Have you ever heard sober Keith? I mean, like...
If he ever sobered up, he'd shrivel up and go away.
If you've seen any of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, you've heard what Keith Richards drunk sounds like, and that's Johnny Depp. in those movies, I mean, that's basically what he was doing the whole time.
Where's the rum gone?
Where has all the rum gone?
Where's the rum gone?
Long time pirate.
Pirate you long time?
Pirate you long.
I think aren't there rumors that there's going to be another Pirates of the... It's strayed so far. I think the last one is going to be a one-man show with just Johnny Depp. And they'll make up some...
He was doing
some
that at
some
this point already.
Pursuing.
It was already happening.
Or it'll be Johnny Depp, and then like several classically trained British actors, but they'll be in, you know, bizarre computerized head makeup stuff, so you can't tell who they are, and then they'll spend $300 million on it and put it out there, and everybody will be able to watch it.
All right, well, there's that sound that saves us from ourselves, our self-referential spiral of doom. The interconnectedness of all things. Oh, there's going to be a new Dirk Gently series or movie or something.
Based on the books.
But with the guy from Harry
Potter. It does have a good cast.
Yeah. We'll talk about that when we come back maybe after this short break. We got to take care of some station business. I think we have
Does anyone know what's happening?
We have some PSAs coming up, and we'll be back after
all
that
right,
for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure? Groovehouse has got a handle on what's supposed to happen now. So.
Tune in for Johnny Ive time.
Ive time.
Drive
hey, Johnny.
Time
what
Ive.
You doing? Oh, I don't know. Just introducing.
Just designing some awesome new Apple hardware.
All right. Well, you're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I've Lee. And he's
Groovehouse.
We'll be back after these messages.
The Woodlands Children's Museum invites you and your child to celebrate going back to school with one last big summertime bash. The annual Shake Your Summer Sillies Out event takes place Friday, August 19th. Come anytime between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. to join in on the fun. We've got live entertainment, art, music, dance, contests, and more to make it an exciting day, all designed for children under 7. For more details, visit woodlandschildrensmuseum.org. That's woodlandschildrensmuseum.org. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Thank you. Electrolove Fest 2016, a KPFT fundraising event, is seeking sponsors to empower KPFT's fundraising efforts and events on September 23rd through 25th. We have generous packages for those who sponsor Electrolove Fest 2016, including tickets, preferred seating, signed posters, multiple on-air announcements as sponsors until the September event, and much more. Please call KPFT Development Director Robin Lewis for details at 713-526-4000, extension 315, or contact event organizer Hank Lamb to find out more about the event, the music, and the opportunity at 936-239-0040. Thanks for supporting KPFT in Houston. 90.1 FM, your community radio in Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. We now return to Technology Bites.
This is Technology Bites.
What? Okay.
We have all your technologies.
Lovely,
and we bite.
Lovingly crafted out of the finest tungsten.
And Lark's vomit.
You will not believe what it feels like in your hand when we get it to you. Try it in your hand. Oh, Barrett, I notice you have a anti-ratting piece of paper over your webcam right now. I didn't notice that you had
one. Oh, no, that's stolen from DEF CON.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were a lot of stickers floating around that said, this is not a camera. I wanted to score one of those, but I did not.
But it is a camera.
It is a camera.
But it's not a
camera. It's not a camera.
So that was one I didn't think about asking on DEF CON. You know, you got, obviously, you know, you brought and used some tech while you were there. Did you have any experiences where you felt like what you were using was being compromised or affected or
what we're asking is your Surface, you know, is it like got hostile AI in it right now?
No, I'm fine. Actually, I put my toes in the water on the Wi-Fi this year, just because I was able to
harden your hardware.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, I had a separate
harden
account. I was booting into Kali, which I also found out the UEFI or the Microsoft Secure Boot really, really is a big pain.
UEFI.
Because, yeah, UEFI. UEFU is kind of...
I see what you did there.
I had to go in, recover, like, you know, like the BitLocker key for the hard drive and whatever, because I made a change in the boot order. So anyway, long story short, I was able to boot up onto USB, get onto the Wi-Fi, because they put out certificates where you could actually verify, and I verified every letter in the program that I got. Checked that out, was able to connect, you know, created the account. And then it was actually fairly tame. I was hoping for a lot more stuff. You know, I had a couple ports open, was, you know, listening to stuff, had to see a true jail when I would boot up, and nothing ever really came in. Although someone did put up a map, and there were, I think we might have talked about it last time, but there were a lot of mobile access points, not of the Wi-Fi variety, but of the, like, mobile cell tower variety. a lot of them that shouldn't be moving around either. So someone actually was doing, like, a full dump. They put it out there on GitHub. You can go see, like, get all the data. And, yeah, it's like, okay, we knew there were maybe a few stingrays, but there's no way there were that many legitimate stingrays moving around, you know, the hotel and convention center areas. So
until you walked out and saw police cars from 40 different cities surrounding the hotel.
But yeah, I never really felt in danger. I never got any Chinese, you know, SMSs, nothing like that. I don't think my phone ever connected to anything. I had it locked into 4G. I had some things on.
Yeah, I had to use mine because that's how we were communicating. So I just hope for the best. I mean, I left Bluetooth off, I left Wi-Fi off, but I did use, you know, cell.
It's pretty cool. There are a few areas, like in the DARPA challenge area, the Cyber Grant challenge. DARPA had some signs saying, hey, if you don't want to be surveilled, power your devices down now.
Too late.
Well, I know Kali Linux showed up on that, you know, again, not a spoiler, showed up on Mr. Robot this week.
Oh, they use, yeah, they like that. They use it a lot.
And a femtocell.
Yes.
Hmm.
There was a femtocell.
Well, he actually, so...
And they were going to pwn Android phones.
I didn't see this one, but I assume. I don't remember any 80s thing in the last one I saw, so I don't think I saw the most recent one. But in the one I saw, he was writing... The last one I saw was the one where it was writing code. He was writing an exploit.
Yeah.
And he's talking about how much he loves hacking and
how
awesome it is.
He talks really slow. He's not very fast at coding. I was like, really?
Are we talking about Mr. Robot? Or are we talking
Mr.
about
Robot.
Remy Ismail,
okay,
or whatever the guy's name is?
Here's
Mr. Robot.
Here's a Houston tie-in, in case you did not realize it, watching Mr. Robot.
Go.
So, in the scene where... What's the blonde girl's name that works for...
Julie?
Penny?
Penny Lane?
No.
No, the blonde girl that works for Evil Corp because she was going to infiltrate him, but now...
Angela.
When Angela is working her way to go drop off the Femto cell, there's a song playing. There's a really nice, upbeat kind of blues, rhythm and blues song with a female singer.
Dead Horse.
Yeah, that's who it is. No, it's the Suffers.
Yay.
So okay. The Suffers got one of their songs put into a Mr. Robot because the Suffers are very hackery.
Oh, yeah.
You know. But no, that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool.
Is that nice. Is good that to a hear. Houston-y,
it's a Houston-y band that's band. Doing very well. They're showing up on The Tonight Show and on Jimmy Kimmel Live and touring around. And yeah. I mean, and it's a great ensemble of musicians and, you know, with a really powerful lead singer who, as history dictates, will have to ditch her band and hire only studio musicians if she really wants to succeed. That's the way that goes almost always, but maybe not. Maybe that she can.
Golly, Miss Molly.
Maybe there's a band that can sustain 15 members or whatever it is.
True.
And, yeah, I mean, that's not a cheap proposition. Well,
that's like the Polyphonic Spree, right? They're a bunch of
and they're still together, or touring strongly. But yeah, they were a bunch of people, but they were also a bunch of rotating people, I think, too. There's only a couple of key members, I believe. I could be wrong.
Barrett should know this.
No, there's like, I've seen them like for maybe the past decade or so. There's like, there's of course the one main guy, but there's like a handful of members that have been there pretty much for the same thing. I think it started out, they're all in the same music fraternity at North Texas. So I think they still kind of shop out of there. So, you know, depending upon, but yeah, they at any given point, they've got like 20, 25 members. So I think when Disney picked them up and they flew them around on tour, they had their own bus/plane at times.
That was one of the greatest.
Was it just one thing that did both, like a transformer?
Yeah, transformered. It's pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Sweet.
But I mean, honestly, like I've talked to, like, yeah, I'm sure Jay Lee can attest to this. Like, I don't understand how bands with like six people make any money, because, you know, that money goes six ways. You talk about a band with, you know, 25, 30 people on stage. That's just, you know, doesn't seem viable.
I was told by one of the members of the Polyphonic Spree that Wake Up and Smell the Coffee was an inspiration to the to the formation of the band.
Nice.
Because they weren't going to wake up and smell the money.
No. No, but I treasure that very kind comment that was made to me by one of the members.
Do you remember what they played or who they were or anything?
Oh, I know who it is. I don't want to call him out on the air, but I know who it is. Absolutely. I met him, and he's one of the string players. Nice guy.
This is related to music, not to technology. Well, except they use technology when they make their music. I'm excited because Granddaddy got back together after like a 10-year
hiatus.
Like not together, and they're starting to do a tour, and they're working on a new album. So that's cool. I really like them.
Yeah,
their music has a lot to do with kind of like dystopian technology.
They had an album called The Software Slump.
Yep, and a lot of their songs reference like. Kind of this mixture, but like kind of like being despondent about how technology has taken over modern culture and has like separated people from each other and separated us from the earth. And anyway, it's kind of got a lot of cool stuff in it. Like one of my favorite songs, which I think it was on Someday. I don't think it was on Software Slump. Was the group Who Couldn't Say, which is about this group of people in a company that won a prize for selling more units than all the other teams, and so they got to go outside and experience the world, and they're like running around and like they're stepping in streams and not like they're freaking out about the trees and how tall they are, and one of them like is calculating like the size and dimensions for insurance purposes, and then like one of them sees a dragonfly and they're like freaking out because they're like, My dragon click has never created anything as beautiful as a dragonfly. Anyway, it's a cool song.
Granddaddy.
Yep.
Groovy, man.
They use a lot of old electronic sounding.
Groovehousey.
To me, I'm not a big fan of the Beatles, but to me, they sound a lot like the Beatles. in a certain way. Like they use
Beatles don't sound like the Beatles the other
what you're saying is they sound like the Beatles if the Beatles were good. Is that your that what you want to put out there?
I'm not going to say the Beatles aren't good. I'm just saying I never really liked them that much.
Are they bigger than the Beatles, which are bigger than Jesus?
No. You know what? I'm with you on that one, and I get endless stick whenever I say it, but you know.
Let's not.
I totally recognize that it's an incredibly important, possibly the most important band to ever exist, but I just don't. I just think they're not.
Not gonna say I hate all their stuff because I don't. And there is some
technology
Beatles stuff I like.
Back to technology, ring it back. Well, in.
But anyway,
technology that brought us the Beatles station. I think that's when the Beatles jumped the shark when they had their own radio station that played Beatles 24/7. That was it.
What station is that?
There was a station in Houston that I don't remember the call letters, but they were all Beatles. All
KBTL.
KBTL?
I don't know.
Why would you? All right,
it's like when that one channel turns Christmas for like several weeks.
Yeah.
I kind of like that, though.
Do you?
It was 6 weeks or a couple of two or three months or something?
Until they went through all 10 albums?
Yeah, I know, right?
They played live. I listened to it. They played. There's the live stuff. Tapes. There's all the post Beatles stuff from.
Nice.
It was KBTL AM.
Oh wow.
Houston. Yes, Beatles radio.
I do like the Beatles. I am not some kind of I'm not one of those fans who that leaves no room for any other band to ever mean anything kind of person. But I mean I think the interesting thing that one of the limiting things to their long-term longevity is going to be the fact that none of their stuff was really in full-on modern stereo. I mean, there's the remasters, but I don't know that that's made a big. Because if you listen to the radio,
let's be careful now. The Beatles, you know, there might be Beatles fans out there.
Yep, look at the phones are lighting up.
I'm a fan, but I do think that the technology, the one of the things is they were out on the edge of their technology, but they didn't have the kind of true stereo stuff, and I think that's affected how much of their stuff is on the air. On various radio stations.
Beatles, Trump, you know, Beatles, Trump.
The thing is, you're either a Beatles fan or an Elvis fan.
Or a Cash fan.
Yeah, I'm not
or
really.
A Stones fan.
Oh, what?
Or a Pulp Fiction fan.
920 kilohertz to be precise. You'll hear nothing but your all-time favorite songs by the Beatles. One great Beatles song after another on Beatle Radio KBTL.
Sounds way better than AM.
Is that?
Oh, that's Hey Jude.
That's you can't always get what you want, right?
That's right.
Strawberry Fields Forever.
It's my favorite Beatles song, Start Me Up. We produced this sneak preview presentation,
so you'll better understand. Yeah, so if you're going to play, so speaking to Pete's point about the low fidelity of the Beatles, if you have an all Beatles radio station on AM, you're
perfect. You're at the top there.
Your choke point is not necessarily the actual recording. So
at the time, my car
that was 1983, by the way.
I had a Subaru, and it had a single speaker in the center of the dash.
Nice.
It had one of the old crummy radio where you push the buttons for your presets.
Oh yeah.
And so it did not have an AM/FM radio, but it was
FM.
It had FM, but it was not stereo. It was not FM stereo. It was just you could listen to FM, but on my Subaru, but. So frankly, the fidelity sounded, the Beatles sounded just as good as every FM station in Houston for me. I didn't listen to it exclusively, but it was a good, you know, if you were just popping around the stations and there was nothing else on, you could go over to them and know that you'd hear something interesting.
Well, if you go to the Continental Club on Thursday nights, there's a band called Beatle, spelled B-E-E. TLE,
yes.
Beatle, and they don't try to look like the Beatles or sound like them when they're talking. You know, they do wear black, you know, jackets and slacks, but that's the only affectation they make to actually trying to look like the Beatles. But if you go see them at the Continental Club on Thursday night, it's a free show, And if you close your eyes, it's almost like going back in time and seeing the Beatles for free. But it's that good. I mean, if you are a Beatles fan, or if
you need to see them once,
they're definitely worth checking out.
Starts at like 7-ish,
and you can get pretty much a lifetime supply of Beatles in one night.
Yeah,
You know, you'll be like, okay, yeah, I remember why I don't own any of their albums. This is cool, but I don't have a single Beatles recording.
Two big pluses. One is you don't have to have a time machine to go see them,
and two, no Yoko.
And two, well, okay, there's three things. Because the third thing is...
Five, sir!
There's just a bunch of teenage girls screaming over every song. If you know, there would be a good dystopian sci-fi movie is, you know, the guy, like, his whole thing is he invents a time machine and he goes back because he's going to see the Beatles at Shea Stadium or whatever. Goes to the concert, can't hear a damn thing because it's just screaming girls for 2 hours while the Beatles... move around up on the stage, and so then it's his nightmare.
All right, so do we have another segment that's not about the Beatles?
Sure.
Elvis segment.
The Beatles have left the building to mix my metaphors.
In the geek world, we hear about new gadgets and gizmos every day, but can they stand a dip in the snart tank?
Okay, I've only got four things this time. There weren't a lot of new announcements as we lead into the beginning of school. They're bigger pushing you on the stuff they've already got. But HP came out with a new rig that is aimed at gaming. The HP Omen gaming PCs. They have the highlight is a completely new Omen X desktop, which is a cube. But one of the things that they did interesting with the cube is it's a cube that doesn't, it sits on the diagonal. It's got a little stand. So at least it isn't just a box sitting on, you know, if it was a cube just sitting on one side, then it's kind of not very unique, but you tilt it 45 degrees and it's kind of unique looking. Of course gamers are not big on platforms from, you know, desktops from big name brands, because they don't have exactly a great track record on using the best stuff, and they often have less upgrade, fewer upgrade slots, if any, versus a white label or a home built, and you have to deal with whatever non-standard parts. HP thinks it can make you reconsider, perhaps. Let's see, the new Omen X desktop promises both the perks of a major company's industrial design with the expansion you crave. The cube on its side look is not only relatively unique in a sea of generic towers, but genuinely functional. Its three-chamber structure separates hot components while giving you room for expansion that includes dual graphic cards, 4 tool-free hard drive bays, and an M2 SSD. Also, it's an industry-standard chassis. HP will sell you the bare-bones case if you prefer to supply your own internals, and Main Gear will even build its own beastly gaming PC around the box this year.
And it will totally rock at WoW and Quake 2.
Let's see. The one thing you won't escape from a major branded gaming PC, though, is the price. It's going to debut on HP's website on August 17th for a starting price of $1,800, which gets you an overclockable 4 gigahertz Core i7, 8 gigs of RAM.
At that price, why don't they just overclock it for you? What's the point?
I think it's probably because then if you overclock it and screw up and toast the thing, it's not their fault.
Yeah, but they're billing it as overclockable. They're already putting themselves at some liability, I would think.
Well,
you could do it, but we don't recommend it, or we don't warranty it if you do this. But you could totally, like, here's the pin out chart. You can do this
if you just want to buy the case. That costs around $600.
Is it water cooled or anything fun like that?
No. I mean, it's got the deal where there's the chamber for the hot pieces versus the drives and other stuff. So it's kind of like the McDLT of gaming PCs.
Okay.
So there's that, and there's some there's photos on the webpage. They also do have a laptop, the Omen 17 laptop. that starts at about $1,600. So none of these are inexpensive little adventures. But obviously, on a laptop part, last I checked, there's not really a like build your own gaming laptop type platform. So you either lug your desktop or you go with one of the majors. Then this one is a little more experimental out there. You just wonder what prompted somebody to try and design a solar cell that could produce energy even in the dark. That might sound like it's the beginning of a joke, but apparently a team of scientists from the Australian National University and the University of California, Berkeley, have successfully made a prototype of a device which can become part of a super efficient photovoltaic cell. It would generate electricity even when it's not in direct sunlight. It would absorb infrared radiation and convert it into an electric current, and this can even happen in the dark. Apparently, the basis is a new optical magnetic metamaterial, which they created by alternately stacking 20 nanomaterial sheets of gold and magnesium fluoride and setting them on a 50 nanometer thin silicon nitride base, in case you want to make one at home. Next, they produced cavities in the material by cutting a series of elongated holes in it via focused ion milling. Again, in case you want to do it at home. Apparently, the deal is that it allows the material to exploit a phenomenon known as magnetic hyperbolic dispersion, which it means that there's a directional, coherent, and polarized thermal emission, such as infrared radiation. It can be tuned to specific frequencies and intensities. And so when you pair it as an emitter with a photovoltaic cell, the material will greatly increase the thermal transfer. So mainly what they did is make a thing that focuses the energy from infrared and that kind of stuff so that it could go to a cell that could turn it into electricity. The researchers are sure that this new device could also be paired with a heater to create on-demand power or even added to a car or other engine to turn radiated heat into electricity. They also believe that making thermovoltaic cells from this new material could considerably improve their heat transfer capability. So that is one of the problems on solar cells is dispersing heat, because obviously they sit up like on your roof in direct sunlight. And so if there was a way where you can not only, disperse that heat, but turn it into electricity, that could be a nice little feature.
You just totally crushed my screen door on a submarine joke that I was going to make, because you provided too many practical details, and then it just wasn't funny anymore because they're really doing it.
Preempted the trolling. That always works.
That's why your article's so compelling that no one could comment because you've trolled yourself. Is that possible? What do you know about that, Lee?
I'm sure I've done something.
You just
like
make
that
yourself stuff so absurd that nobody knows how to respond to it. That works for me.
Okay. All right. Yes.
Kind of like Dirk Gently, he said, leading maybe back into the conversation we were having a bit earlier.
It's holistic.
Douglas Adams seemed to be able to self troll and also make it so confusing you didn't know what to do. Anyway, another new product. This one's interesting from Google. It's called Duo, and it's their video chat app. They announced it earlier this year at their annual developers conference. The thing about it is, apparently, I read an article with somebody using it. It acts a lot more. What happens is you don't have to do all kinds of Skype type things like setting up accounts and all this stuff to be able to talk to somebody. If you give someone's phone number, you dial their phone number in the Duo app, and if they when you call somebody, if they don't have the app, then it will basically act as a regular phone call, but it'll also give them the chance, if they're on iOS or Android, it'll give them the chance to download the app and to use for calls. So there's that piece. It's not available for Windows, OS 10, or Chrome OS. It's only for iOS and Android. It has a feature called Knock Knock.
Who's there?
Knock, knock. Lets you see who's calling before you pick up. If you're receiving a call and your friend is a contact on Duo, you'll see a video preview of the other line before they can see you. So if you have the friends who like to call you while they're not thoroughly well dressed, you can ignore their call or not dressed at all if they're trying to troll you that way. Duo will let you know that everything you're doing can be seen by the recipient. So, you know, once you try to call somebody with Duo, if you're on the calling side, then you probably need to have your, you know, phone face on and, you know, not scratch your nose and do those kinds of things. It is only for video cards. It doesn't do texts. Which actually Google's got another app that's coming, that'll be for text and images and the like. Some people can't understand why maybe they didn't just put all those together. And it will not do only audio calls unless the connection is so bad that it can't do the video thing.
Well, this sounds like there's easy work. You could put some construction paper up in front of your camera, and then you can have audio only calls. And if you want to send text, you can just draw on the construction paper and send text that way. It's very versatile.
That could work. One of the plus sides is that Duo is built on WebRTC, or Web Real-Time Communication, a standard that allows voice, video, and P2P file transfers without any additional plugins or software. Your video chats are end-to-end encrypted, so you don't have to worry about anyone, including Google, spying on you. And if the government or anyone else asks Google for data, it can't decrypt the content of your calls. That's a plus. It's not really meant for tablets. Apparently, if you, you can't download it directly from the Google Play Store to your tablet. The app officially only supports phones. But if you install the APK on Android on your tablet device and sign in with your phone number, it will work fine. You just won't have access to it on your main smartphone unless you re-verify your phone number each time. And you also, obviously, with your tablet, wouldn't have the, and apparently you don't have the option to use cellular connectivity. On iPad, you can find it in the store and put it on as an iPad app, but it's not optimized for iPad, so it gets the blown up iPhone mode. So, and I would say the other thing at this point, it sounds like Duo is pretty new. And so this is for, I think they're at the early adopter stage. You know, take that. It's free, and if you've got friends that would use it, you may want to give it a try. It does have some interesting features. It's sort of Google's equivalent of like FaceTime or whatever. So, if you're wanting to get into that video calling thing, you can try Duo. And then lastly, Hideo Kojima left Konami after Metal Gear Solid 5. And Konami apparently is going to milk whatever they had left from him, even without Kojima. They announced the latest entry in their flagship Metal Gear series. And you wonder how that's going to go, but here's the description.
Metal Gear Semi-Solid.
Metal Gear Survive.
Metal Gear Flaccid.
It's actually called, the actual game is Metal Gear Survive. It's a four-player cooperative survival game set in an alternate reality wasteland where former soldiers serving under a series protagonist slash antagonist Big Boss must fight for their lives. Are there zombies? There sure are. In a press release, Konami insists this game will, quote, continue the pedigree of Metal Gear Solid 5's highly praised gameplay design, unquote. But it's hard to overstate just what a departure this is for the stealth action series. How do they explain the significant shift in tone and style for the new entry? Wormholes. So basically what they did is they...
I'm not saying it was wormholes, but...
You can watch the trailer, and it's wormholes. Basically, they took all the assets, you know, like all the performing assets, the landscapes and the character design tools and that kind of stuff, I think, and they apparently crapped out a, like, four-player survival game. So it's got the look of Metal Gear Solid 5, but from the stuff I've read around... it sounds like it doesn't have any kind of stealth action to it. It's zombie killing. It's running around blowing stuff up and blowing up zombie creatures.
Lame.
With your team.
Lame. It's not the Metal Gear series is not that kind of game.
They're really showing Kojima. Although I think the description said that, of course, this one will be in stores long before the Norman Reedus Naked Baby Whale game.
Oh, yeah, that's Kojima's other game.
Kojima's game that's been announced long before that one ever shows up to be played. So, but yeah, just this really sounds like not getting it at all and then squeezing out something from whatever was left, because this doesn't sound like even a... Yeah, I get the being confused about what the heck's going on. That's kind of a Kojima thing, but it usually at least it has some sort of coherence.
So
it's probably a meh. But yeah, I it was just interesting to see how far they could make it fall in this, you know, in less than a year since Kojima bailed out.
Oh, pretty far. Never underestimate
I'm sure they put their best corporate committee on coming up with this one. What do we got? We got all these characters. We got the soldiers. All right, so it's got to have soldiers.
People like zombies, right? Yeah, kids like zombies.
They were the original thing was going to be Metal Gear Robots, but then the Mr. Robot people sued them when it was all the guys were hackers and stuff, and so. And then zombies, because they're still hot, aren't they?
This was published by Konami. Is that
the fact that you have to ask that means that maybe zombies are starting to have they peaked? Have we reached peak zombie?
Did you say, Pete? Did you say this was being published by Konami? Was that right?
Yes.
Yeah. So okay. Well, whatever.
Yeah. So they're going to keep doing the Metal Gear thing, or at least calling it that. Apparently now they're going to have even less sort of Metal Gear to it than Metal Gear Solid 5 did, because it's not like Metal Gear Solid 5 was really overloaded with Metal Gear, if you've played it.
Not a big fan.
I liked it. I've played all the levels and well, gotten an like S
it.
On
you
most
can,
of them.
I didn't like it either, but you can like it. We'll let you like it.
I just sat and listened to the Beatles and played Metal Gear Solid 5. What's wrong with that?
Can't say I'm a fan.
How's the computering going, Lee?
I'm all ready to go. I'm all up.
Do you have a server that you can connect to easily from the internet to download your software packages?
Well, no, I just pulled it down from. I pulled everything I needed down from the App Store. Although now that I have just gotten this all set, I put one password on. I've kind of rebuilt everything, and I pop over into the App Store, and I notice one update pending, and of course it's the next macOS Sierra public beta that now I need to reinstall and just undo everything that I've done.
There's no way to salvage.
But it will do an upgrade install over the version that's on here.
But you don't want to do that. You want to
I don't know. I mean, this is public beta 4, I think, that I've got installed. Public beta 5 just came out, and the reason I have to have it on here is because I'm helping write the review for the new version when it comes out, which is going to be next month. And I don't know. You want to make sure that when you're using pre-release software, it's always difficult because you have to try to make sure you're going to get as close to the release experience as possible. And so now I have to kind of try to ask myself, is like the convenience of just doing an upgrade going to screw anything up? Am I going to have something that's representative of what the final experience
is going to be? Well, you were able
to
rebuild all
what?
Of this during the course of the show, so it really wouldn't take you that
well,
long.
Well, I know. I mean, I'm pretty portable. I've moved, as so many other people have, I've moved so much of my identity up into Dropbox. And, I mean, I keep everything in 1Password at this point, and my 1Password vault lives in Dropbox, so all I have to do is, you know, log into anywhere and install Dropbox, and basically then I've got my whole identity then is there, All my writing, I use an app that keeps all my writing up and on iCloud. It's the only thing I use iCloud for, I guess. So, I mean, everything is sort of, you know, all floating out there. But still, it's, you know, it's a pain. It's kind of funny that, like, the closest I've ever come to having a truly mobile digital identity was working at one of the first jobs I had out of college where we used This was before Windows 2000, I think. I think this was when NT was still when NT4 was still the standard. With roaming profiles, roaming network profiles on NT4 has been like the closest thing I've ever had to like a truly portable digital identity.
Yeah.
And of course that would get horribly screwed up when, you know, inevitably somebody would have 25 gigs of something on their desktop, and then like that would screw roaming profiles up for everybody in the whole network and you have to turn it off. But I mean, that old idea has still been the closest, I think.
Use Java thin clients.
Well, I don't hate myself that much. No, but I mean, yeah, I mean, everything's all cloudified today anyway, and I can get back up in an hour on a new install, but still, you know, it's just such a pain. It's always such a pain. There's...
That's why you get paid the big bucks.
Give me that $5 an hour. Got to be worth it.
I carry my digital identity around on paper. I write it all down.
Well, and I mean, what... So, I mean, this is kind of a thing that connected people are going to have to face in the next... I would argue that you're almost facing it today, is the idea of where your digital identity lives. What parts of the things on your computer are indispensable to you? Like, if you sit down somewhere, what do you need with you? You know, you need your passwords, you need your... possibly you want some information to follow you around, and how do you get that? And then, like, that's the essential stuff, but what about the nice-to-have stuff? Like, how do you...
NSA toolkit.
Well, how do you carry around the pictures that you want?
Special porn.
The pictures that you want? How do you carry around the music that you want? How do you carry your contacts?
You store it all on the dark web.
Well, or
I think Google. Part of that is that if given enough bandwidth, I mean, if you could have an always on internet connection wherever you went, mm-hmm. then you would store that either on a server that you owned and you could access over
yes.
the internet, or you'd give it up to a third party like Dropbox or something
well,
like that.
Well, that's kind of where I was going, yeah. Like, I've got everything on my NAS at home. You know, I've got however many terabytes of TV and music and everything that I've amassed over the years.
Legally.
All legal. Let's, you know, ripping DVDs that I own and, you know, because I'm not really, I mean, I'm too old, I think, to be part of the Spotify generation. I can't stand streaming music.
Really?
Yes, cannot stand it. It is absolutely antithetical towards how I consume content.
I like streaming music, but I like to buy physical CDs.
I don't need
for myself.
I don't need the CD, but I need to have the file. I need to own the file because I want to be able to listen to it when I want to listen to it in the format that I want. If I want to like scan back by 5 seconds, if I want to repeat it, if I want to listen to the other things on that disc.
I view Spotify as radio. Is pretty much how in my mind Spotify is like radio or like Pandora. It's all that's streaming. It's radio.
Yeah, streaming is radio, and even something like satellite radio, like XM.
Right.
Is
but I mean,
radio.
It seems like the industry wants to move everybody to that and not
give
you the option to own your
yes,
own.
Yes, because that closes that whole digital ownership loophole thing where your digital copies are very easy. You can easily make digital copies and they have a high fidelity and they're identical to the original and copies go out of control. I just can't do it. I want to have it. I want to have my cake and eat my cake and then have my cake here with me. You know, I want to be able to have all of the media that I consume. I want to own it.
I like cake. I have almost all their albums.
You're like going pie. The distance. So anyway, I keep all this stuff on.
I won't put music on an electronic device unless I own the master tape.
Well, I'm not that nuts, but I feel that way sometimes. No, so I keep all this stuff on my NAS, and then I've got a big Synology 8-disc NAS that I have at home. That's a network attached storage device. And when I go out of town or whatever, I don't stream Pandora, and I don't sync stuff on my phone or whatever. I just punch open an SSH tunnel and connect back to my NAS, and I listen to either with iTunes or with VLC or whatever. I listen to my music or watch movies over the tunnel from home, and that's how I have my...
Well, having your own media server, I mean, which, you know, you're talking about having access to all the music. If you're a musical, if you're, I guess, an audiophile, and you have...
Music was just an example, though. It's like
no,
the
no, but
thing.
I think it's a good example because the amount of storage that it takes to maintain that kind of library... if you're a music file.
Well, but he uses 32-bit MP3 encoding, so you get a lot on there.
I'm just saying...
Great DVR, radio quality sound.
I remember my first smartphone, and I remember how many low-res photos it would hold.
Is this your Trio 650 or
and now, and now I've got an iPhone 6 Plus, that 128-gig iPhone 6 Plus that has every single digital photo that the thing has ever taken and is not in any danger of running out of room. Mm-hmm. And I anticipate, at least at the way my media consumption is going, that by the time I start to hit up on where 128 is a low ceiling, there'll be the 256 model will come out and take care of that. But that addresses it in the small side of it. But on the larger side is like what Lee's talking about, where you have giant media libraries. Like if I was to take, for example, even just all of my digital photographs, and I, you know, I have
this is like a raw library.
Yeah,
yeah.
I have all of my raw images, and I have them stored on two separate backup hard drives on my computer, which, in a pinch, I can team view over to my computer and get access to that. Because I've been on vacation and had somebody contact me and say, Jay, I really need a copy of this photo that you took. I'll give you money for it because we need it like ASAP. And I'm on vacation and I'm going, well, I know that that photo exists in my archive and I need to get to my archive.
Right.
And there's no way for me to store that on the cloud. I can't store the 8 terabytes of digital images.
I thought Flickr let you do that. I thought they had a giant plan.
They do. I haven't libraried all of my images there, but even so, I mean, I suppose I go and look for my raw images because if somebody comes to me and says, I need this photo, I go, okay, I don't want to give you the JPEG that I've processed out at the lower resolution. I want to go get the raw. And because what I get asked for too is images that are much, you know, they're from way back. And so I go, well, I can totally process that better now. Let me do that. But I can't upload all the raw files to Flickr. I can only output to JPEG. Even if I upload a TIFF or something like that, or DNG, I don't think it'll take that, but it's only JPEG. So I have to go get that file. And that also requires me to upload it there and catalog that. But at any rate, what I'm saying is that I've got tons and tons of raw files, which I work from as an example, and I need to be able to get to them. And I wish that I had, you know, several umpteen terabytes of storage in the cloud that I knew that it was getting backed up and that I could access from any internet computer. But I go back home to do that. But that's not something that the average computer user can do.
No, but at the same time, I mean, I wrote a thing a couple of years ago. And still it hasn't quite come to pass yet about how the thing that's the true barrier that's standing in front of everybody and really, even if you don't know it, is keeping you from being, you know, being as digital as you want to be is your upload bandwidth, is the amount of upload speed that you get out of your connection at home. Because even people, I mean, it's getting better. It's nowhere near as screwed up as it was a few years ago. But I mean, still, even if you've got a 50 megabit or 100 megabit connection on your home internet, odds are that your upload bandwidth is something that's, you know, pathetically tiny. It's, you know, 5 megabits a second, 10 megabits a second, something like that. Something to where, you know, you can download a 4K movie in, you know, 5 minutes. But if you wanted to re-upload that same 4K movie somewhere else, or if you wanted to upload a 1080p movie that you filmed on your phone to YouTube instead of 5 minutes, it takes 5 hours. You know, the constraint of outbound bandwidth is keeping everybody. That's the man keeping you down, man.
Consumers, not creative.
It sounds kind of populist and funky when I'm articulating it, but I mean seriously, it's true. It's like there's the pipe that goes into your house is set so that consumption is easy, but creation is difficult.
Asynchronous. They don't want you running servers. That's been forever. They don't want you running web servers, mail servers. They used to shut you down. Now it's actually in. You've got to get a business class if you want to do that. It's very not what the web was supposed to be about.
No, it's very asymmetrical and it's annoying. And it's the kind of thing to where even if you don't think it affects you, it affects you when you sit down to, like, I want to upload this YouTube video, or I want to, you know, share these pictures with somebody. How do I share these pictures? Why is it taking 10 hours to share this one picture with somebody? You know, it's like it absolutely affects you, even if you think it doesn't. And it's the same barrier that's stopping you from being able to, you know, upload a movie or whatever, is the same thing that's stopping you from being able to keep a mass of digital goods, be they movies or videos or photos or anything else digital, in a central location, like at your house, somewhere that you control, and be able to take it with you when you go around, because you don't have the bandwidth to send it to yourself.
I keep them in my closet, but it is kind of a pain to get all the vinyl records out.
Yeah, as well.
I'm a feeling, you know, basically, though, the thing was, when that started, the asymmetric thing was a feature, not a...
It's a little bit of both.
What used to make more
because
sense...
Because they were worried about that, you know, basically you download the movie at high speed and then re-upload it to all your buddies.
No, I agree. They were worried about that. Plus, you only have a finite amount of total bandwidth, and they had to make a decision. Early DOCSIS designers and DSL designers, you had to make a decision on how do you chop it up. Like,
okay,
I
just thought of the most millennial hipster thing ever.
The most?
Possibly. Okay. So what you need is...
Good job, Jay. You're doing good so far. Keep going.
Handlebar mustache.
Interested, yep.
Jeez, back off.
Constant feedback.
Back down. Shut up. All right, back to curmudgeon Jay. No, hipster Jay. All right, so you have your record collection at home, right?
Which I do.
And because you're a geek, first you're a geek. You say, okay, I'm going to set up an automated system with an arm that I can key in the record that I want to hear, not the digital file of this, but I want to hear the actual record.
What, like a tape robot?
Yes, like a tape robot. So you
like
type
with a number and a letter.
Not
and a
like
number?
A jukebox.
I thought that's what you were. That's what that.
But,
that's
okay,
what I
like
was
a similar to a jukebox, but more like a library. You know, digital library, or not a digital
like
library.
Like in the open
tape
hackers.
At any rate, this arm that would go, because it would be really cool if you had this arm that you typed in and it went scanning through your thousands of albums and pulled the record out. And was able to then take that record and put it on a turntable,
dust it off,
and play it.
Get all
yeah,
okay.
Dust
off
it, clean it, and I zap it.
Yep.
But then
align your needle on the table.
But let's take it a step further.
Complain about.
Let's take it a step further, in that you can do that over the internet, and it streams that record playing in high fidelity to your phone.
Gosh, wouldn't it make more sense, though, to sort of create a digital version of the music on
that's
that
not
record?
Hipster enough. that doesn't go to the heart of the nice, you know, hearing the album. You
I want
own
a drone
record.
To drop me the actual record.
All right, so what if...
Or on Walkman.
What if instead
of... You got a close and play app on your phone?
What if instead of a needle in the groove of the record, it's a laser? And the laser reads the grooves in the record.
Oh, they do that. That's
non-destructive.
Yeah, they make a lot of that because
they're really
time,
expensive, though.
Yeah, they are.
But even better, it should be destructive. It can only read it once.
That's right.
It actually melts the record. Yeah, you need to turn your laser down there, buddy.
Because there's untapped audio quality deep in the grooves beneath the plastic.
What if we pick, like, what if we pick a maximum like number of samples per second that should be able to adequately capture all of the sound in a given amount of like dynamic range?
This feels so deja vu.
And we take a bit rate that should be sufficient enough to capture everything in there. I mean, what if we pick,
again,
I don't know, let's say 44 kilohertz and 16 bits.
These are made up numbers.
44.1. Let's do 0.1 because that
add
extra
that point
none
one.
Of this is going to matter if you don't have the right
44
cables.
Doesn't sound good at all.
Well, and the reason it'll never work is because of the impedance mismatch between the simulated reality we're already in is sampled at 44.2 kilohertz.
But what if
I draw on the edge of
the record with a green marker? Does that help? Is that going to fix
everything?
You
guys think you've got all this all figured out. I'm pulling all the headphone jacks everywhere. No more intercompatibility.
Okay, forget streaming it. You just need a wireless headset that will reach back to your receiver transmitter at home.
No,
everybody's issued an IPV6 frequency.
No. We have to do this wired.
It operates at about one half of a hertz.
No, it has to be wired. Everybody has to have multi-mile long extension cords going from their headphones because wireless is unacceptable.
No, you just plug in. You just go ahead and wire everywhere.
There could be a system that taps in and you plug in and you have a digitally encoded tap that allows you to get to your pipe only.
Well, what if we build a large wooden badger?
All right.
Then, Lancelot, Galahad, and I leap out of the rabbit, taking Flicted completely by surprise. Flicted, Groovehouse, and Barrett leap out of the rabbit. Oh.
All right.
Yeah,
end of
rant. The badger.
I like my idea. I don't care if you don't like it. You and your digital music. What's going to happen when we lose electricity?
I have to fetch a lavash.
Big EMP.
Mm-hmm.
Big EMP.
Fetch a lavash?
Yeah.
Fetch a lavash.
Yeah.
Fetch a lavash.
That's the popular... That seems to be the most popular kind of apocalyptic scenario.
What, the giant EMP?
The giant EMP, that somehow that would disable us. Then we'd all be driving around in whatever car, pre-1975 cars or whatever.
I just read something. I just read a post-apocalyptic book, and I'm trying. It wasn't very great. I'm trying to remember. Oh, I just read.
It was not very good. Let me tell you all about it.
Let me tell you. Let's start from the beginning.
Mad Max.
No, I read David Brin's The Postman, which has almost nothing to do with the movie The Postman, surprisingly. They both have a guy who finds the uniform of a postman, and that's like basically it. The stories are completely separate. But yeah, that was like a big post-apocalyptic thing. You just said that and that reminded me of it. No zombies, though.
The equation group files, I'm going through those. I actually got up the bravery to go start looking at them.
Did we talk about that? Do you need to level set?
No, there's just a lot of cool stuff in here. There's a lot of cool new code names in here. Everything from like durable napkin, second date.
What's equation group?
Banana
aid. Is this like algebra 2?
Pete talked about equation group quite a bit during the news. I think we might have had our headphones off in here.
Okay,
Pete,
yeah, I don't
covered it fairly
Pete.
Well.
I don't like hearing Pete's voice anymore.
Extra bacon is also in here. So all these scripts that are in, and it looks like to me. So here's what it looks like. We kind of conjured or kind of wondered about like how they selected which ones to dump.
Right.
It looks like based on the directories that they're stored in, they just took like a very small section of the alphabet and put those out there. So they all start out with runs from B to hang on.
Now, each one of these is supposed to be specifically what? Each one of these
most
is a
of them
tool
are,
or a method the, or what?
No, most of them are tools. There's some readmes in here. Most of them are tools that will get you into like everything from PICs to Cisco firewalls without passwords. Some of the Cisco stuff, looking at it, you still need like an enable password to get in there. But it'll actually get you into a lot of firewalls without doing anything. And then one of the big things that the equation group was known that we didn't touch on was they were some of the first people to drop hardware, firmware, malware, more or less, where they can infect the boot sectors or the actual, I guess, like the microcontroller
so
that
no
controls
way you
the
can
hard drive.
Wipe and reinstall,
so you really can't get it. It's lies, like just like if you pretend like you've got an operating system and when we're talking like rootkits, where by definition, because that is baked into your operating system, you can't see that it's there because it can do all the smoke and mirrors it wants to. On the hard drive, you really can't get to that firmware on there. Right. So what it does when there are secret codes on there to where it'll store secret information on sectors that won't report back up to BIOS. Mm-hmm. It just does a lot of really cool stuff to where when you're talking about persistence, like when you want a piece of malware to sit on there, where the JLE maneuver won't actually fix anything, this is where you go. You go super, super low level.
What's the JLE maneuver?
Install it over
itself. It doesn't matter anymore.
No. Doesn't matter
it's
anymore.
It's not relevant, but it's apparently relevant enough to snark at me with it.
Yeah,
let me teach the youngin about the olden days.
It's pre-Lee.
There's a bookish minute on here too, if you want to take a bookish minute, Jay.
A bookish minute?
A bookish minute is one of the exploits on
okay,
here.
Okay, so way back when we started this show, Windows 95 mm-hmm. was the operating system of choice.
Right.
For people who wanted Microsoft.
It's back when dinosaurs ruled the earth.
And we there was a when people get their computers so messed up that they couldn't do anything else, we would suggest reinstalling Windows 95 right back on top of itself, mm-hmm. which preserved all applications and just kind of did a refresh on the operating system, and it would solve certain woes. And that became affectionately known as the JLee maneuver.
Mm-hmm. When I was working tech support for Gateway, I would do the exact same thing to customers, except I would tell them that it's going to take a while, and I really can't stay on the phone with you while it happens, but if you still have problems after the reinstall, call back in with the same ticket number, knowing that whether it worked or not, they wouldn't be talking to me. To just call back in and talk to somebody else.
But that was, you called that the Lee maneuver.
that was an upgrade for the J Lee maneuver.
Right, because if they called back in on the show, they would probably get you.
Yeah.
Oh, but, and they called back.
But it worked a lot. I did the J Lee maneuver, and it really, my computer's like new again.
Well, I mean, yeah, back then.
They got rid of all the garbage that they had dumped all over in the wrong places or had, you know, approved.
I don't know what it did. It was like magic.
Put back all the registry entries that they read that they needed to remove.
Right.
Or removed all the ones.
All
that
those pesky system files. I don't know what they do. I'm going to free up some hard drive space.
System 32. Man, how important can that even be?
I figured out how we'll know the teddy bear icon.
This.
You need to delete that teddy bear icon because that's a virus.
Yeah,
that's right.
If the exploits that Barrett is reading about, the way we'll know if they are legitimate NSA tools. Will be when
who's
next,
an NSA
week,
tool?
We'll know that they're legit, that they really got all of the NSA's stuff when next week we start hearing commercials for forgot your password? We can remember it for you at the NSA.
We've got your password.
Lost a file?
Cisco's come out and patched against two exploits that were on there, and then I'm just finding another guy that's actually running some of the PIC stuff on some of his PIXs, and it seems to be working. And everything looks super legit in here. There's actually some really cool text things in here to where it's like there's some comments in here to where, like, look around on the router. If anyone else is on there, get out.
do some of these tools rely on 0 days, unreported 0 days to option?
These are all
unreported
0 days.
Okay, so none of these work, like, by utilizing that extra board that the NSA puts into all the Cisco routers in the secret room in the factory or whatever,
I mean,
right?
I've got 8 or 9 that I'm looking at. I've only made it through the first 3 or 4, but it all looks like it. Mostly it's written in Python. There are some executables, some binaries that I can't get into. I'm sure someone's going to decompile them at some point. There are a few things where it does look to see if other modules or other things have been installed.
And why didn't they dump this 3 weeks ago before DEF CON?
I'm seriously, but yeah, they start out, so it's four-letter acronym. So it starts out EGBL, ELBA, ELCA, ELCO, and it ends at EXBA. So to me, it looks like they just took like a little, you know, little cross section of some E alphabet and threw them all out there.
Before we close, which is going to be a minute here. I mean, cast yourself back. When did the Snowden revelations hit? That was 2013 or 2014.
Oh no! And now, yeah, that Gitcom hub just went down.
Oh,
or that. Sorry.
No, I think our internet went down. Just went off. No, but cast yourself back. Okay. Oh, I just went offline then. Cast yourself back to pre.
I shouldn't have ran that exploit. Huh?
Like, internet's down.
Think back. However many years it was, 3-4 years before the Snowden revelations came out. To when? I mean, you're talking about an agency, a set of agencies, a set of state-sponsored agencies that had all of these exploits, an unknown number of additional exploits, all of this, you know, just sitting behind the scenes watching the tech industry do its thing, but with all of these fingers out everywhere. I mean, this is based on what you've seen here, and then, of course, at past conferences and everything, because you keep up with security pretty regularly. I mean, this is like basically a complete and total infiltration of basically everything, right?
Oh, yeah. 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 They can, you own what they're attacking here. If you can maintain persistence there, you're good. You've got the network. You can see everything flung over the network.
All right. Well, you've been listening to Technology Bytes, talking about technology and biting every Wednesday night here on KPFT. We're so glad you could tune in, but now we got to go. This has been Technology Bytes, talking about technology. I'm
and
Jay
biting.
Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Cuckoo.
When you listen to KPFT, you hear things that you would expect to hear on a community radio station. Relevant news, the arts, great music. But when you tune to KPFT, you also hear things you wouldn't expect. You hear different perspectives that make you think about our world in a new way. Pacifica's mission statement is about building understanding between nations and people. What you hear on KPFT can have a profound effect on how you live. You listen to KPFT because it expands your understanding of yourself and of the world. And we can continue to bring you great ideas and culture because listeners like you contribute. So why wait for a pledge drive to support KPFT? Give a call to our membership department at 713-526-4000, extension 314. Again, that number is 713-526-4000, extension 314, to speak to our membership department and become a member. This is listener-sponsored, commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
Thousands of you have heeded the call, but there's always room for more. You can find KPFT on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. From our latest updates to funny videos, contests, news, and more, you can find us anytime, day or night. We're at KPFT Houston on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We'd love to give you the latest. Plus, you're already on Facebook. Why not get behind the scenes of Houston's leader for independent music, arts, ideas, and culture right now? Again, find us at KPFT Houston on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram,